Welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast. I'm Tom Bonnet, and I've been following the Trans Pyrenees with race coordinator Rory Kemper.
Can you hear my voice going?
And photographer Tom Hardy.
I think they also want to exercise the dog farm.
In Control Car 2. So far in the series, we've tracked the riders from the start of the Trans Pyrenees in Biarritz in France to the most easterly point of the Spanish mainland, Cap de Creil. Now the riders are making their way back to Biarritz. There are mandatory segments called parkour, and with it being the Pyrenees, most of those are climbs or descents. The parkours guide riders to take on many of the climbs of the classic randonneur, Le Raid Pyrenean. There's a 10-day touring route that covers 28 cols over 790 kilometres, or there's a 720 kilometre route of 18 cols that has to be ridden in under 100 hours. In the Trans Pyrenees, the riders will have already covered over 700 kilometres before they begin their raid on the Pyrenees. Race director Anna Haslock and race coordinator Rory Kemper have thrown in some mandatory route deviations. The cutoff to complete the race within general classification, which means to be in the official finishers' rankings, was 6 a.m. on Friday the 11th of October. By the afternoon of Tuesday the 8th, that deadline was closing in fast on the majority of riders who were still out on the road. Our story begins outside a cemetery at the foot of the Col de la Cruzette in the French town of Biarritz. We found Philippe Stein, Cap 78, filling up his water bottles. It was 5:15 in the afternoon and there were just a couple of climbs between him and the Col de Tourmalet.
Ah, that was awesome. That descent, ah.
No, the climb. Just coming out of this super chill descent after a super chill call and then like 18%. Yeah, that was awesome.
What's your plan now?
Well, around now my plan is always to ride all night. And then in a few hours we'll make that decision again. So I'm feeling great. And I usually just get cold. I think I forgot my base layer at CP1. Which means that I've been looking for a shop and haven't found one. So we'll see if I get cold or not. Hey!
How you doing? I'm not riding up that.
Hey?
I'm not riding up there. Yeah, this descent was also super steep.
Not that anyway. Oh my word.
All right. I'm going to get going.
Great to see you.
How you doing?
Good.
On a good day.
Yeah, you having a good day?
Yeah.
Getting over a bumpy stomach, so.
This is Dan Walker. We had a quick chat with Dan about music and Scottish legend Graham O'Bree's belief that reggae is ideal for time trialing. And then Dan told us about becoming an accidental lone wolf for a long stretch of the race.
I took a really whack route going to Andorra, I think. I went south and everybody else went north. Like everybody else, so.
What's your plat number?
73.
Yeah, I remember
looking.
I don't know
how many miles it was like, on the second day.
I was like, what's
like,
73 going south
doing?
And
around? Yeah. Well, when you, yeah, when you've committed, and you're just like,
Did you try and go back to the route at one point?
No, but I did take a wrong turn, 7k up a hill. Gets to the top and then realise it's come back down again.
Yeah, we had a look at that and wondered if you were trying to cut back onto
the
route.
Yeah, it's because basically. My original route was to go slightly further north but go east that way. And then I rerouted in the morning. And then my Garmin got to a junction further south and tried to send me back onto my original route, which is why I went 7k uphill and then back down. But it'd be interesting to compare because it didn't actually feel that bad. But it's quite demoralising when you're watching everybody else go north and you're going south. Like, I can't describe how that feels, but yeah. I paid for it the day after anyway.
Right. Take it easy. Have a good evening.
The next time we saw the riders, it was the following morning, and clouds were lying low on the mountains and rain was setting in. It would hang over the riders all day and into the night.
It just got cold, so I stopped. And then I cut out my extra socks and put them on my arms. And wearing two pairs of boot shorts. All the stuff that I was thinking yesterday that I shouldn't have taken with me now is becoming useful. But I'm just going to buy a new base layer in Bagnères de Luchon then I'll be fine. I mean, I've had 2 8-hour nights now, so I have no more excuses. I have to just finish it.
Are you just going to crack on now all the way?
Yeah. Hopefully, I can finish by tomorrow sometime. That's the plan.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Alright. All right. Catch you in a bit.
Go for it. Yeah.
We drove up alongside Dan Sparrow, who we'd last seen at Control Point 3. As Tom Hardy took pictures, I stuck my microphone out of the window.
I slept in a bus stop last night and woke up this morning with a spider's nest in my hair, and they keep crawling down the side of my face. Terrific. I thought I lost them on the last descent, but I've just felt another one come down now, which is nice.
Oh.
Yeah. Looking forward to a coffee.
Find a barber and have all your hair shaved.
Yeah, that might be. Well, my wife's going to burn my hair off if there's still a spider's nest in it by the time I get back. But hoping to still be in with a chance at GC, maybe. But that just goes on a climb like this. That every minute that goes past, that just goes tick, 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 tick. And there's a lot more climbing to do. So yeah, I'm going to crack on.
We're on the road over from Castellón when we drove past a Lidl, and Rory Kemper decided it was a good place to stake out and wait for riders. It wasn't long before pair 111A and B, Rachel Batt and Jim Stewart, wheeled in their bikes for a respite from the rain and a bite to eat.
You're shaking your head.
Oh, it's hideous.
It wasn't the nicest one.
No, we've just come over the Portet d'Aspet, but in my best French, and the Monte. The Aspet was quite pleasant, really. But the Monte was hideous. It's not like hideous smashing it down, it's just really, really wet. Like wet making. and it's kind of humid as well, so you're like we've got waterproofs on, but I'm still soaked underneath. So yeah.
Cold start then?
Yeah, it was quite a nice start, like, because the guy in the hotel had delightedly told us it was going to rain today. So, we'd kind of like set off, got up to the top of the Aspet and no rain at all. And we were like, oh, this is good, like, no rain. And then, we stood there for a few seconds putting warm stuff on, and we set off down the hill. And as we set off down the hill, it just started like spitting a little bit, and then we're just like, oh, let's just have a faff stop and put everything on and our contact lenses in. So you can't see anything, can you, when you've got glasses on? So.
How are you feeling about the cutoff?
Tight.
Tight, yeah.
We are meant to be getting to the other side of the Tourmalet today. In this weather, we're going to see what happens. We'll try and get as close to it as we can.
Is it a bit risky?
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous of going over it in this weather. I mean, I was nervous enough of going over those in this weather, and they're shorter. And it's not like freezing cold, and we do have quite good wet weather kit with us because we anticipated bad weather. But the Tourmalet is a different bag. It's bigger again, and yeah, I mean, the descent's quite long. Yeah.
Did you say about 45K?
Yeah, about 45K from the top of the Tourmalet down to the town that we're hoping to stay in, which sounds great because it should be a big descent, but in reality, if we're cold and wet, it might be pretty miserable. So we'll see.
How's your cold?
Pretty terrible. I've started coughing stuff up now as well, which is great.
What sort of stuff?
Brown stuff. It's brown. This is brown, not red. When it's red, that's really bad. So I'm trying to avoid that, and then yeah, see how we get on.
We went back to our stakeout and saw Emre Oral, cap 60. He rode past and then he changed his mind and looped back to go to the Lidl. Then he changed his mind again, U-turned and pressed on. Mark Aykroyd then came straight past too, and we saw him take a detour off into Bagneret de Luchon, so we chased after him and we spotted his bike leaned up outside a boulangerie.
C'est possible, trois cafés? Trois. Merci.
Not messing around with the coffee there.
No. Why would you mess around with a coffee?
So it's been a little bit wobbly earlier on, so I thought I'd get on with it. I only had one cup of quite weak bakery coffee this morning, so I need to get back up to par. I normally drink a strong pint of coffee in the morning at the best of times, let alone when I'm racing, so yeah.
I probably think you buy each of us a coffee.
Yeah, you guys are giving me some cover. Yeah. The bakery this morning were genuinely shocked at the amount that I ate. But that's good, isn't it? That's part of the fun. Feels like I might just make cutoff, so I want to kind of give myself the best chance of surviving a good day of riding today. So yeah.
Do you think you're gonna have to ride through the night to make cutoff?
I'm not gonna ride through the night tonight because I think it's gonna be hard and wet, so I'll stop somewhere fairly early. So I've been trying to do it like a series of hard day rides because the riding's so tough. I need recovery time. So I'll sleep somewhere in a hotel tonight, and then if I need to ride through the night to get like 350k or something done the last day, then I've got that night, a warm night, to get to Biarritz. So fingers crossed, I might get there.
And do you think it's going to be tight?
I think it will, because today will probably not be huge mileage because the weather is just making... I'm not a great descender, and on greasy roads it's tough. So for me it's tough, so we will see. And plus the mountains now mean that each stage is quite committing, so you have to make an early decision. You know, am I going to go or am I going to cut the day short? So we'll see. I'll get over the next two cols, and then after that I think it's the big one. So I'll need to make a decision before I go up over 2,000 metres.
A couple of days before, Mark had left his saddlebag open on one of the climbs and lost his jacket and leg warmers.
So I went to a general fancy schmancy outdoor shop and bought some quite nice looking tights for 70 euros. But they do look like they're going to keep me warm. So I'm going to try them on now. And if they look about right, I'm going to chop the legs off. So I've got a nice pair of leg warmers for the descent off the...
Well, I guess partly off the Peyrezoad, partly for climbing up the Aze, because if the weather's turned by then, which is meant to, then it'll be absolutely grim.
And then maybe for committing to the Tourmalet later on today, if I get around to that. But I was genuinely a bit worried that I might be at risk of getting hypothermia if I committed to it and it was a bit grim up there. Whereas at least if I can keep my legs warm, I know that I'll probably be all right. Oh yeah, oh, these things are mint. Right.
I hope so, for 70 euros. To ride the bike for you.
Yeah, I'll use them later as well. But if I cut them up right, I'm going to keep them whole. That's it, they're staying as they are. And I'll cut them if they cause any issues.
We climbed out of the village up to the Peyrezoad Pass, and it felt like we were burrowing into a cloud. We parked the car opposite an airport that was used in the Bond film Tomorrow Never Dies. It was called Outerport 007. In 2012, the summit where we were stood was the finish of stage 17 of the Tour de France. That day, Alejandro Valverde was king of the mountains. But when we arrived, it was Dan Sparrow.
This runway is amazing. I saw it on the map. I've been looking forward to getting here. It's the one thing that's got me up this hill. That was horrible. That's the worst one so far. It does look like Wales now, so that's nice.
It's pretty crazy seeing that windsock not even moving when the last time I saw you, it would have been at a right angle.
Oh, yeah. We've had every weather, right? We just need snow. And that... Fortunately, that bench, yeah, we just need snow, and then we've had it, then we've had everything.
Well, you might be in luck. You're putting a space blanket on underneath your jacket there.
Yeah, I've got one change of kit. I don't really want to get it wet, it's meant to rain later, and I was planning on riding through the night, so just using the space blanket to get down the hill and then quickly take it off at the bottom and carry on.
Just as Dan set off down the hill, through the white cloud appeared Nico Depultargo Cabrera. Without hesitation, he dropped his bike down and bounced over for a chat.
This morning I was like, there's no way I'm going to make the cutoff. Like, there's no way. I'm so ragged. My knees keep swelling up. My chest hurts depending on like the altitude. It seems like the higher up I am, the better it is. But then when I get down low again, it's like the swelling goes back up and everything hurts again. But yeah, a little cup of coffee and cigarette in town, like, changed everything. Now I'm like, dude, I'm gonna push through the night, I'm gonna hit this, I'm gonna climb all these cols. So I feel pretty good now. You know, among the mountains and the exhaustion and the resupplies and the logistics, like, there's also, like, for me, the emotional side of it. I mean, you guys have seen me now probably in several different stages of, like, feeling good just to feeling rock bottom. Like, after I had that coffee earlier and I was just jamming, I was like singing this Van Morrison song over and over to myself and just kind of like crying, but I was like feeling good, but I was like, I don't know, it was like this catharsis, you know, just like had to like purge something out of my system. And then when I hit that climb, I felt like, yeah man, I'm ready to go now. So
that's really cool to see you come up here like bouncing and all hyped after,
dude,
a few days of seeing you kind,
it's like,
of, yeah,
it's crazy,
pushing
man
through.
It's been such a roller coaster, this race. Like, you know, going into it, I mean, obviously I knew it was going to be hard. You make the route and you look at it and you're like, you're looking at all the elevation and you're looking at the distance and, you know, you're kind of trying to sort out a plan for it. But like there's no accounting for like what the experience is actually going to bring you, you know? And it's different for everybody, you know? Some people may have a race that just everything falls into place and they're feeling good the whole time. And I'm sure there's people who are having a race that's just like, they just can't seem to find their rhythm or they just can't seem to click. So, I mean, I really feel for everybody out there who's like kind of going through their own like cycles right now, because I'm doing it too, you know?
Yeah, I've always, that catharsis is quite a big thing for me, which is why I like, because you kind of feel like you're just cleansing yourself, like, dude, emotionally.
Absolutely.
All the baggage that you have at home, you're just kind of working it out in your head, and then you're crying, and you're like, why am I crying? Like,
I know.
And like, I'm really happy, but you're like, you're crying, and then an hour later, you're crying from sadness, because there's no, like, the coffee shop shut, or,
totally.
Like, But so, yeah, it's funny, and then you finish it, and you're like, that was just, like, the whole experience.
It's crazy. It's like, you know, if you can't afford therapy on the regular back home, I suggest racing ultras. It's like, I'm sure when I go back home, I'm going to feel a depression, you know, because you're coming down off of all that, and then you've got to go find your rhythm back in your normal life, whatever that may be. And I know after TCR last year, I was really depressed. Like, in essence, it's a very simple thing. It's a simple way to live. You wake up, you eat, you ride, you rest, and then you do it all again. And then when it's over, you're like, what is the purpose? Like, what am I doing? What is my life supposed to be right now? It's interesting, but it's gotten under my skin, and it keeps me coming back. I don't know if it'll keep me coming back to this particular one. It keeps me coming back, you know what I mean?
The tagline, isn't it? TPR is cheaper than therapy.
Dude, it really is. You know, I deal with mental health issues in my own way, and this is like a huge way for me to kind of like face those things, you know? Like, I don't think people relate sport so much with all these other things other than the competition, you know? Like, yes, it's a race. There's a winner. You might lose if you can't finish or whatever, you know? It is a competition, but the vast majority of us out here competing aren't the first place, you know? We're not the winner. But we do it for our own reasons, and we like get our own thing out of it. And I think that's what's pretty magical about an event like Trans Pyrenees.
As Nico was about to set off into the silver white wall engulfing us, Jean-Patrick Mothe, Cap 47, came into view.
What happened today, JP? We were looking and you were in the town for quite a while.
Oh, I need to sleep a little bit. I need to sleep because I ride from
8 last night.
Yeah. So I ride all through the night.
Woo.
To Bagnères.
Bagnères.
And I was.
That's it, time to sleep.
Yeah.
How are you feeling better now since you've had a sleep?
Yeah. Yeah, my body woke me up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, without the alarm clock.
Okay.
What was that? Okay. I have those funny conversation with my body. I call him body. The other day, I say to body, let's wake up. And he said, no.
Really?
No. Okay. So I wait for 15 minutes. I call body again. And he say, no, I don't move. So I go? Yeah, you go. So I went by myself without body for 4 hours, and he came after that. You know?
Yeah.
Funny, interesting conversation. Okay, I have to go, huh?
Yeah.
We followed JP down the mountain until the road levered upwards and he was back in his climbing gears. We overtook, and before long we were driving beside Jamie Richardson Page, Cap 33.
Do you guys know what... is it 6 a.m. that the finish closes, or is it 6 p.m?
A.m.
Ah, on Friday.
Yeah.
I better get going then. Damn it.
Yeah.
No 10-hour sleeps.
Yeah, no more of those.
Catch you later.
See ya.
No sleep till beer rits.
No. Sleep till beer rits.
few hundred metres further up the road, we found Rose McGovern, Cap 15.
Yesterday was hard. This morning was difficult. I overslept. Rory, are you pacing me here?
No. I'm trying to get it so you can talk to someone. I'm not going to pace you. I don't want you to bomb out.
I didn't set an alarm this morning. I was going to leave really early. But,
Did you forget or did you...
I forgot.
Did you?
I fell asleep, my phone in my hand.
Oh no.
Absolutely exhausted.
So is it putting the pressure on in terms of getting to the finish?
Yes and no. Yes, because I started off so fast that like I thought I could have finished soon. But my plan was always to get to Wimbledon today. And then in that respect, finish Thursday night. So I'm kind of on track-ish for plan A. Maybe. I got sunburned yesterday as well, which is stupid.
Is that hurting today?
It's fine, but I think it hurt yesterday. And I washed my kit last night, which is really stupid, because now it's all wet in my spare kit. But it's just fine.
Well, it's going to be warmer tomorrow, so
cool.
Just a day to get through.
It's fine, I quite like it. Nice change. Good to see you guys.
Nice to see you.
You too, Leo.
Yeah. You know, it's 10%, right?
Yeah, no, you're smashing it, mate.
Just around the next corner was Julien Grabaud, Cap 28.
Julien.
Hey, boy.
Hey, having a snack?
As you can see.
You've got a last push to do now. How are you feeling?
Feels very weird. I think today is the day that I'm enjoying the most cycling. Basically, been thinking of stretching every day. Every hour, basically, from the first fall that I had after basically 20 kilometers, then after I passed out on the first call, so I was just like, there's no way I'm making it to the end, there's no way. I also, because I'm basically, for me, it's like a real home stretch. Biarritz is my home, so it feels so nice to recognize all the names of the cities, you know? Like, I don't know.
Well, we'll be following you and rooting for you.
Thanks, mate.
We'll see you soon.
Ciao, guys.
As Julien was talking to us, Rose was coming up behind him, and behind her, Jamie was gaining ground. We left to give them some space and saw the three riders chasing each other up the climb. We drove on towards the Col de Tourmalet and sheltered under a roof covering the road. The pale concrete structure had a modernist beauty, offset against the steep, veiny cliff face. As the light fell softer and more atmospheric, Tom Hardy took photos until the light had all but gone. The next morning, we were back out before the sun rose and drove on to the next climbs, the Col de Salor and the Col de Aubisque. As we tracked down our first riders of the day on the Salor, the sun was just glinting over the mountaintops. It was nearly 7:30 in the morning. Any riders that we saw would have between 200 and 300 kilometres left to reach the finish by 6 a.m. on Friday morning. It might sound doable on a normal day, but a lot less so after the fatigue of climbing more than 5,000 kilometres every day for 6 days on end. The first rider we saw was Julien Grabaud. He'd stopped behind the Col de Soleil sign. It had black writing on white painted metal and it was specked with stickers.
You've just pulled out this sticker here.
Yeah.
And you're about to stick it on the Col sign,
exactly.
But it looks like a guy wearing a boater hat.
Yeah, it's my grandfather. He passed away 3 weeks ago, so couldn't really focus on the race. It was a bit hard to think about it. And the first day of the race was just such a mess. I fell and I called a friend. I was like, I want to quit after 15 kilometers. I just wanted to turn back and go home. Then I had like this issue in the first climb, like passing out. I was like, I'm never going to do it to CP1. And finally I did it. and slowly started to have more strength and taking more pleasure every day. And basically, I kept from the first call to the last one on sticking those stickers. I don't really know why. I think I'm more racing for myself than for him, actually. But I mean, I'm living around here next to the Pyrenees, and each time I'm gonna do a climb that I've been doing on this race, maybe I'll see one of those stickers and I will still like remind it. So I mean, for me it's just a like very small thing that only gonna matter for me, but that I did something a bit more than just racing my bike. So also like all this time on the bike really helped me to get away from it and to use everything I got from him for just moving forward and everything. I knew like he did everything that he had to do in this world, and now letting go is always a bit hard, you know. I guess we see each other tomorrow?
Or? Tomorrow morning.
Yeah, cool.
Cool.
Sounds very good.
You're going to be there?
Yeah, I will. I hope.
Yeah.
As we were waving Julien off, Jim Stewart and Rachel Batt had just reached the top.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, good.
Infinitely better than this, though.
Got a bit worried this morning. I checked the tracker at 6:30 when we were just leaving, and I could see you hadn't moved. So, yeah. What's going on?
Best laid plans.
The alarm went off at 5, and we were just like,
nah.
We snoozed it. I mean, he was like, let's snooze it. So we snoozed it for 10 minutes, and then it was just like, we just got off at 6.
So you did the Tourmalet in the dark last night. Pretty late.
Yeah.
How was that?
Bleak. It was all right, though, to be honest. The climb itself is actually really not that bad. It's sort of built up as this legendary status climb, but compared to the other stuff, it's all right. It's fairly steady gradient the whole way up. It feels like a lot less than it says on the signs as well. So you're looking at the numbers and it sort of appears to be 10% gradient the whole way, but it doesn't feel like that, so that's good. But it was a bit miserable in the rain. But then there was this really nice dog at the bottom, so it wasn't so bad.
So that cheered Jim up. It doesn't take a lot. We've had like 3 encounters with horses in the road, and it's just like some of them yesterday.
It was really weird yesterday in the mist, because we couldn't see anything for like, on every climb, basically. And you could just hear this sort of ensemble of bells. Sounding really odd in the distance, and you couldn't see anything obviously where they were coming from, and then till you're about 15 meters away, and then all of a sudden there's like 20 massive horses in the road. But this happened on an uphill at one point, and we sort of tried to sneak by them, and it was fine except for when they start to move, a little bit scary really, because they're enormous.
Like they're about, their shoulders are like higher than me on my bike, or that's what it felt like. They're probably not, but and their asses are like huge, and they're just like waddling along the road. It's just like, oh man. And like he says, they just make a racket. And you don't know where they are. Like some of the descents, they're really fast descents, like coming off some of these. There's a few tight hairpins at the top, but then there's some mass, like big ass, like straight valley roads that are amazing. But every so often you're going down it and you can hear ding ding ding, and I'm just like, oh ding ding, is that horses crossing? Like I'm just expecting a horse to come running out the woods, but they don't, thankfully, yet. Anyway, we're not done yet, but I don't want to count my chickens. But yeah,
yeah.
All right, let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah, see you later.
You again.
Last night I crossed Tourmalet. It was very cold. It was tough last night. It was tough. The downhill to go to Le Saint Sauveur was very cold. I had to stop many times because my finger were frozen. And it was another tough experience. Mm. 3 nights in a row. But I wanted to be there on time. I want to arrive at home, to see the kids, so I hear him. I make my best to be tonight in Biarritz.
We zip back down the climb to check in on Nico Deportago Cabrera and find out how he got on climbing the Tourmalet the night before. His luck hadn't improved.
Buenos dias, amigos.
How you doing, man?
Woo! Well, had an interesting night last night. Whatever that climb was before the Tourmalet, some crazy storm was up top. You couldn't see 10 feet in front of you. Probably one of the scariest descents I've ever had. I was just like gripping the brakes the entire way down. And went on to climb the Tourmalet. About a quarter of the way up, my right pedal came clear off the spindle. So, trying to climb quite carefully in hopes that it'll get me to the finish. Maybe I'll find a bike shop along the route, but I think it'll be okay. Just riding with a variable Q factor. So it's still clipped into my shoe, so that mechanism still works. So the pedal body just kind of slides off the actual axle. So as long as those two parts stay somewhat intact, should be good to the finish.
Where did you get to last night? What happened last night?
I got to the top of the Tourmalet, or just below the peak, or the summit rather, and found a room, slept for a couple hours. It had all the facilities, but I was like, just didn't want to get too comfortable. Because I knew today, no matter what, it's going to be a long day. So I just wanted to get some sleep. Started at about, 5 or 6 this morning. Finished the climb up the Tourmalet, did the descent. Down at the bottom of the descent, there was an amazing cafe open that had just laid out all their fresh baked pastries. So I had some, pain au chocolat, fresh croissants, more coffee than absolutely necessary. The only issue with this pedal really is it's making my knee flare up quite a bit because it keeps moving left to right on the axle. So just trying to get through this last two like big coals at a chill pace. And then I think after, I don't know what the next coal is called after this one. I think after that, just put the hammer down, try and time trial my way back to Biarritz. Later, boys!
We drove back to the summit of the Col d'Herbisque and found Mark Ackroyd wearing the leggings he'd been buying last time we saw him.
Hey, man.
Hey. Oh. What number of coffees are you on today?
I'm on 2 coffees, which is to say 4 coffees. So I haven't gone for the triple slam yet today.
Save that for the afternoon.
I think, yeah, or for the whatever happens before the night. So there might be some sort of, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe some kind of cheesy potato dish and 3 coffees before the final push in. That sort of thing might happen later on. We'll see.
So are you stopping here? Or are you going to just get your warm layers on and go
down?
No,
I'm going to crack on. I'm going to try and stuff my face with this croque monsieur I've just carried up the col and smash on, I think.
Yeah. All right.
I'm feeling pretty good, so I'm going to make hay while the physiological sun is shining. Yeah.
Have you made use of the leggings yet?
Plenty. Yeah. I made a call to stay at San Larry last night. I was getting quite freaked out on the very cold, wet descents before that. So I thought, basically I went to bed at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
I saw you'd stopped.
Yeah, so I decided to just sleep. Got up about 12:30, was sort of had a massive breakfast, completely resorted all my kit, and started cycling at 2. So 2 absolutely classic sets of Pyrenean coals in the bag already. So it's going all right. Just
in the pitch black.
Unfortunately, I didn't see any of the Tourmalet whatsoever. Absolutely terrifying, the whole thing. But it's done. So yeah.
Hey, Ken, how are you?
Hey.
Also pausing to sort himself out before the descent was Ken Woodhouse, Cap 77.
So that's food, oil, clothing,
water. Now I might put this on as well, actually. Yeah, coming down to Tourmalet was really cold. And then it's down the valley for quite a long time after that, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay.
Nice one, Ken.
See ya.
Good luck. See you later.
Such an interesting part of the race now, with like just
these people are just really, they're on the edge, right? Like if you can just see how like Mikko was so happy when he was coming up the climb and then getting refused service because he didn't have his credit card. It was like an immediate down, like down where you could see the emotion, just completely gone. And then everyone else kind of coming up, just, are they going to make it? Aren't they going to make it? Ken, is he going to sleep? Is he going to push through? It's quite an interesting, because they're all really tired.
And they all seem more calm than I would expect, but I think it's the tiredness, isn't it?
Yeah.
They can't really rush all of the time to try and get to that finish.
No. And they just kind of
don't have the energy, probably.
Don't have the energy, and that kind of, I'm not going to call it faffing, because it's kind of like, it's all these little bits and things that they're doing when they're coming in. So Ken was quite efficient there. Like, came in his head, he really knew what he was going to do. Like, he needed to eat, he needed to have water, he needed to put his layers on, he needed to put one on his chain. And he basically did that, got on his bike and he left. While he's done that, Mark still, like, messing around. Got Nico, he's trying to get out of his slump in the corner. So, it's an interesting approach, because it's not over yet, and that's the thing. Like, you kind of think it's nearly done. But
it's been making me a little bit nervous. You know, we were just chatting to JP, and it was really nice to talk to him, but, like, an hour and a half later, he's still here. So if he misses that cutoff by, you know,
by an hour and a half,
yeah,
he's going to be thinking, I should have just been cracked off.
He's going to feel good, isn't he?
Yeah, the positivity of sitting down, having a beer, having some food, an omelette, and then basically going up, he's going to have a massive, he's going to feel good, but it has definitely cost him time.
How are you doing, Jamie?
Yeah, this is really hard work, isn't it? When Jamie Richardson Page walked up, he had tape wrapped around his hands.
What's with the tape on your hands?
My hands are just like, they're all right sort of to move around, but just like on the bars, they're just,
yeah.
It's really sore.
This is definitely the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm not going to do it again.
You say that now.
I'd do something like this again, definitely. I love like ultra races and stuff, but this is just so much harder than I thought it was going to be. It's like, I've never wanted to quit a bike ride as much as I have this one. Like, I've wanted to scratch like every single day, and I don't know how I haven't scratched yet, to be honest. But I'm not going to now.
What does that say on your bike?
Pin it, you fairy.
What's the story behind that?
This frame was given to me by a friend, because I had a kinesis, and a couple of weeks before the race I got pushed off my bike by some motorbikers and it completely totaled the frame, and this guy gave me this so that I could do this race on it, and I really didn't like the colour of it, and I went and saw my mate to show him the bike, and he was sort of taking the piss out of the colour of it a bit, and I went off to do something else and turned round, and he was like crouched down, like giggling and drawing on it with a pen. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm drawing on it. And I was going to rub it off, but I actually quite like it.
After the Col d'Or Beach, the worst of the climbing was done. We'd now be following the remaining riders to the finish as they dashed to make the cutoff. We drove up beside Emre Oral. We'd seen him briefly earlier in the morning, and it had been a bit of a surprise because he's usually all smiles, but he was grimacing up the climb. But now he was nearly at the end.
Hey, how's it going?
Your smile's back.
Yeah.
You're close.
Yeah, very close. Just been having family sending messages through. Grandma's got the bottle of sparkling ready apparently, so just, you know,
How's this last section? Because it's kind of quite flat, this bit. Is it feeling quite long?
It feels a little bit long. It's weird. I'm just like counting down the individual kilometers, which kind of makes it feel pretty long, but it's quite fast. It's quite nice and sort of, yeah, relative to all the, you know, tourmalet and whatnot. It's, yeah, it's just quite a change.
Yeah, it must be quite satisfying to be ticking them off quite quickly.
Yeah.
How many have you got left?
I think we've got about six, maybe.
Six?
I think so, yeah.
Come on!
Yes.
So close.
Yeah, see you there.
We arrived at the finish and found Philippe Steins, who we'd seen a couple of days earlier. He was there welcoming the riders in, having completed the ride in 6 days, 11 hours and 57 minutes.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
All right?
Yeah.
Good.
Lots of people coming in still.
Lots of people still coming in, yeah, yeah. There's somebody that's about 4K away.
Yeah.
Emre.
Yeah, I spoke to him near the Cap de Creus.
Yes.
He was going and I was coming and we met at the same gas station, so.
Oh, cool.
He's a really nice guy.
It was 2.5 days since the fastest riders arrived at the finish. Here's race director Anna Haslock with the story of the race's first and second place.
Today at 12:45, lunchtime, Thomas Jacqueline finished first. He finished in 4 days, 7 hours and 48 minutes. When we'd been filming him on the last ride-in, we could see him kind of hunched over and looking a bit uncomfortable on the bike. So we were a bit concerned as to what was wrong. And when he got to the finish, we found out that he'd actually taken a fall. I think the previous night his Garmin had frozen and he'd been trying to fix it whilst descending on some tight curves and he'd come off the bike. So you could see some kind of mud on his jersey and then obviously quite damaged his shoulder. And he was in pretty good spirits despite clearly being in some pain. Not long after that, Samuel Thompson, Cap 45, rolled in. However, after he'd given in his brevet and had a little chat, we realised he'd failed to ride the parkour, the final parkour. So I had to take him aside and have a quiet word and let him know that he hadn't and that he had to. And then he had the choice of either just leaving it and finishing his ride and just saying he'd finished, or he could head out and redo the parkour. So he headed out, rode the parkour out, and then turned around and rode it back in again. And his actual finish time was 4 days, 11 hours and 34 minutes. The two guys were pretty close throughout the race, and Samuel was actually in front of Thomas in the early hours of this morning. So yeah, we have our first two riders in.
I asked Nicole Davison from Caprivello what it had been like watching the riders out on the road, and then the feeling as they arrived back.
The news of them doing this great challenge on social media is ever present, but it still feels a bit disconnected. And then that first rider rolls across the finish line, and it suddenly becomes this real, tangible thing. You get to experience that first exhale as a finisher, and it's pretty incredible. And so, shock, because, wow, this person has just done this amazing thing that before now was just an event on paper. And now it's reality. And then they kept coming and coming and coming, and the energy level here in the shop just kept growing. And it was really one of the most remarkable things that I've gotten to experience in a long time.
Outside the shop, the first of the riders I've been following through the day in Control Car 2 arrived. It was Emre Aral.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks. You were flying today.
Yeah, I was having a good day.
Yeah.
I'd like some beer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Next to arrive was Julien Gravaud.
Welcome.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, bro.
You've been flying in.
Yeah. The end of the parkour was just a nightmare. Now it's done. Chubby's done.
You're home.
Yeah, I'm home. For real. For real, yeah.
As we waited for the next riders, we saw a dynamo beam searching around the corner. It was Chris Thomas, and he was joining the welcoming party for the riders. He came 5th in this year's TCR and 9th in the TPR. I asked if he thought the Trans-Pyrenees was harder.
That's way harder, man. It was the fluctuations in temperature. We got told that this weather's been pretty amazing for this time of year. It was freezing. It was so cold. And then it was boiling hot. And then it was freezing again. So endlessly putting on and taking off layers.
I would have found that so hard, I think. Just the morning starts in that cold. I think trying to bivvy in that. I just don't know if I would have got going.
Well, I didn't even have a bivvy or a sleeping bag, and I still slept out 3 times. I was so cold.
Why did you sleep out?
Just because I hadn't planned enough. I didn't realise how underprepared I was until I started. And then I'd be chasing people or wanting to push on a bit further, and then I'd find nowhere to stay and be like, right, well, I'll stay in this hay barn. And so that was the best one, is I slept in a hay barn and pulled the hay over me. That was great. That was the best one of all of them. I slept once by a river. That was horrendous. And I slept once at the top of the Col de Jau. That was also awful. There was a huge storm. There was just bits of tree coming down all over the place. It was like the most sort of frightened that I've been on a bike. This was the first edition of this. I didn't really have any idea what to expect. I kind of went in with a similar mindset to TCR. And there was, you know, there were huge swathes of the Pyrenees where you couldn't resupply food. You needed at least like 6 to 8 hours of food on you to keep going. So I had periods of 4 hours with no food, and that was awful. Some areas are so remote they don't take credit cards, so you're like going into places and there's food there you can't buy any because you haven't got any cash. So just poor preparation on my part. It was poor, and I don't know whether it's like hangover from TCR. It was just not prepared enough, not ready enough. But this was so hard to finish. After the second day, I was like, I can't race this anymore. I'm just gonna have to survive to the end. That was kind of my thinking in the end, was just try and survive through to the finish. There's no, like, the race is now that it's not with anybody else.
Just before 2 a.m, we welcomed in the duo of Rachel Batt and Jim Stewart.
Well done, mate.
Cheers, Tom.
Amazing riding. Well done, Rach. How you doing?
I'm tired and I'm hungry. I'm starving. I've been starving for the last like half an hour, but I've got so many clothes on that my pockets, which have got the left like remains of my food in, are like too stuck to me, and I couldn't get to them. So. Yeah, but I'm all right. I'm just really, really sleepy. So. Yeah, I can't believe you guys are still up. Wow.
It almost feels weird because we saw you this morning.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, we were basically at the foot of the Tourmalet this morning, weren't we? I know, okay, at like one of the towns a bit further away, but it's quite a long way.
Quite a long way. It's quite crazy that you can ride from this side of the country all the way across the Pyrenees to the other in like 2-3 days.
But it would be natural, wouldn't it, to stop at the other side and enjoy yourself?
Well, no, because you left your bag here, didn't you?
So oh, yeah.
I'm with him.
Yeah.
Do you reckon you're still getting better at riding it a pair? You seem like it. You make it look easy.
There's things we could do better, but they're not normally riding related. They're normally faffing related.
They're normally me related.
They're normally Rachel related.
I don't know if we're getting better. I think we're getting better at riding ultra races in general, but I don't think that's down to being like a pair. I think that's just because we've got a bit more experience of like what kit we want when, where we want it, like quicker access to it and things like that. But it doesn't stop us like stopping, basically. The biggest problem we've got is the amount of time we spend off the bike. But we just can't make ourselves stay on it. So it's like we stay on it enough to finish in time, normally.
Next over the line was Mark Aykroyd.
What's your time?
It is, that's a good question, it's got the numbers. 6 days, 20 hours, 55 minutes.
Congratulations.
Couldn't really have got that any finer, could I?
After Mark, we saw Kurt Edmonds, but rather than celebrating, he was leaned over his handlebars looking at his GPS. Hey.
Confused.
What?
Have I done it right?
Well, the finished parkour?
Yeah.
Let's have a look.
I'm very confused.
You've not. Hold on. So, let's have a look. Yeah, Kurt, I think you might have skipped off some of the parkour, mate. It's not far for you to go back.
I come back. All right, cool.
Nice one, Kurt. He was tired, wasn't he?
He was exhausted, yeah.
Yeah.
But I have to say, he knew straight away he made a mistake. Like, he came in and was like, I think I've messed up the last parkour.
I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm confused. I don't know what's gone on. And when we had a look at it, he took it like a champ, basically. He was like, yeah, I've got to go back. There was no hesitation in what he was going to do. It's only an extra 20k, but when you finish, you've got to go back and do another, 25k, whatever it is on top. It's gonna, this bit here where he's cycling back out is gonna hurt emotionally. It's just gonna kill him, I think.
Yeah, I think it's almost better that he knew that he'd done it rather than getting here and then allowing himself to think that he'd finished and then being told he had to go back, because he might have just left everything on the road at that point, whereas. Yeah, he hadn't really let himself finish.
No, he definitely didn't, I think. He almost, and you could see when he was coming in, he just looked a little bit like confused about where he was and what he was doing.
Mm.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah, hopefully he comes back and he can then have a beer and know that he completed it properly.
Standing on the pavement, looking up and down the road, was Jean-Patrick's wife.
Yeah.
How are you guys feeling about JP coming in?
Exciting. Exciting. I'm waiting now. Just a few kilometers.
No.
Only at least three, I think. So, very exciting. Waiting for him to arrive. Breathing, I think. Tired, but in one piece. Yeah.
Have you enjoyed watching the race?
Yes. I was very exciting. Like, I was looking at the map every half hour, checking all the time where it was, and it was good. I'm tired too.
Yeah, I bet.
Just like psychological tired. But it's good. It was a good race. I'm very proud of him.
Yeah, he's done really well. Like, I've seen him obviously quite a lot over the course of the race. And
yes.
He was tired today and he just wants to go for a surf. I'm like, okay, that's like one of the last things I'd want to. I'd want to sleep and have a shower, but he's like, I just want to get back.
Yeah, I just
see
want to
you,
get back.
See all the family, and then I want to go for myself.
Congrats, JP.
Merci.
I loved your story about talking to your body in the third person. You've been doing that today?
No. Body and I, we were in sync. That was cool. Yeah, it happens sometimes, you know. But body didn't want to wake up this morning. That's it, I think. We were both tired, but you get in the rhythm. I was thinking about the format of this race, and it's great because it takes time for your legs to get used to the weight, you know. And by the fourth day, I think you're on it. For a normal rider like me, I don't have. It's my first ultra distance race with a backpack and stuff like that, so. Took me a while for getting used to it, and but you have great feeling at the end.
Mm.
You know, I wish it lasts for 10 days.
Really?
Yeah.
TCR must be tempting then.
No, I no. Don't say that. No, thank you. But that was great, and each time I was like a little bit down, I was like. Okay, this is holidays, mate. You're having fun. cruising. Here we are. Okay, the crazy guys are crazy.
C'est vous les organisateurs. Bravo, c'est à jour votre truc en état.
Shortly after JP and the Vespa took off, Rose McGovern arrived.
Hey, congratulations.
Woo! Oh, well done, mate.
Cheers. Who's the guy that's redoing it?
Kurt.
Yes.
So after I'd been spending about an hour trying to figure out how to get on that bloody parkour, and seeing someone come towards me, I was like, I'm going the wrong way.
Did you stop to speak to him?
No, he was like, I'm going the wrong way. Okay, good. Well, not good for him, but yeah. Struggle.
Was it a struggle? You seemed really on top of the ride.
The riding was fine. Everything else, as always, is difficult. It's a few times it was hard. And I was like, you know, obviously, like the headwind.
Yeah.
Not to and from Spain to Figueres to Roses and back. I didn't have enough gears on my bus. Felt like it was going to be really easy. It was a flat day. It was really, really hard. And you know, when you think you're going to get somewhere quickly, you don't, and that was just mentally destroying. That was really tough. And the hot day, because I got sunburnt, I think that just took it out of me. And then the morning in Andorra, when I took an unnecessary gravel single track and got up really early, made a good start, and just didn't, and then felt really ill getting up to Paso del Casa, and that whole day was just going backwards. But then it was nice when you got into rhythm. It was always fun. It was nice seeing people, beautiful routes. Climbing's fun.
We kept catching you in the mid-afternoon and you'd be like
mid-afternoon's
flying.
Always good. Yeah, and I don't do that. I like moving. It was just when when I get lost, I'm lost, and I all going the wrong way, and that happened. It's frustrating because you've ridden hard and you're like, why am I having to take my route again? Or my battery pack eventually ran out, so I bought a new one, and then it wasn't charged. So it's just little things like that, you know. I've just spent ages in the supermarket queuing for a bloody battery pack, and then I can't use it. I'm going to use it, but it's still out of battery. So those little logistical bits and bobs. So I blew up a plug socket in a hotel, so I had two plug sockets and I had one plug socket, and a cable broke. So just little things like that, just kind of. But no, the riding was fun. Yeah. Beautiful.
Everything around it made it a bit harder.
Yeah, but that's part of the game, isn't it? It's part of it, yeah, that's the whole thing. That's where I need to work, I think, most on. There's a lot of stuff, being an organised person.
With us at the finish was Hannah Sparrow, waiting for her husband, Dan Sparrow, and with his family on the other end of the phone on FaceTime.
Who is it? Who's Dan?
Hiya! What are you still doing up? Past your bedtime.
You've done it!
Yeah, I know. Hey, what?
I'm a bit. He's a bit shell-shocked.
Hey man, you're still up.
Yeah, I'm still up.
Yeah,
congratulations.
You alright?
Yes, you?
Yeah.
Seconds later, Josh Ridley and Nico Deportago Cabrera made their entrance.
Hey!
Gone again. I suppose I need to give my card to somebody. I was feeling pretty haggard there for a while. There was a moment coming down. But I was like convinced, I was like, whatever my tracker is telling me to do, it's not right. I'm not in the right place. This isn't the right road. And then like all these farm animals were making all kinds of noises, and I was like, they were like saying things to me. And I was like, I'm in the wrong place. I'm not supposed to be here. This isn't on the course. And then I like stopped in the road and was just like kind of staring at my computer, and I heard him roll up, and I was like convinced it was just like in my head, and then he was like, oh hey mate, and I was like, fuck, dude, what's up, glad to see you, oh my god.
We've obviously seen you a bit today.
Yeah.
And yesterday you were worried about like the cutoff of the time.
Yeah, I was definitely worried. And I honestly, after those two colds today, I was not worried. I was like,
got it.
I got it.
Yeah, it's obviously, yeah, since day one, like this has just been about you finishing, man, and yeah,
dude, totally.
Getting it done.
It was like, it definitely took like a... Had to like get over a little bit of like bike racer pride or whatever, you know, because like, I mean, I think that was probably like the hardest part to like. It almost would have been easier to like, for my ego to like scratch, than like finish 2 hours before the cutoff, you know, when I was like entering this race to like race and like, you know, want to post a good result or want to do, be one of the top 10 or the top 5 or whatever. It would have been easier, I think, in some way to just, like, scratch and be like, not have a result, you know? Because then you could still be like, well, I could have gotten it, but this happened, you know? Like, oh, I could have been in the top 5, but I crashed. But, like, maybe I couldn't have been in the top. You know what I mean? Maybe I wouldn't have even... Maybe I still would have finished in the same spot had I not crashed or whatever. But yeah, it definitely took, like, a little, like, pride thing that I had to get around.
The weirdest thing, the thing that I'll take away is like just the mental strength that you don't use in your daily life at all. And like, it sounds really corny, but pushing the limits of what is possible as a human being. You cross a line and nothing becomes bad anymore. Like I slept in a toilet twice, three times. But it's just like, you just do it. You just cross. I was thinking of this, the Hunter S. Thompson quote. When you make a beast of yourself, you forget the pain of being a man. Like, the sort of things society accepts you, or like wants you to do and everything like that. You just throw it all out the window and you can achieve something stupid like this.
So emotional because you've seen the same people the whole way through.
Mm.
You've seen them going through their like the ups and the downs, and just even on the, you know, in the morning, like really tired, and then they're happy, and then, you know, they're sad, and, you know, they get here and they turn up and their family are waiting for them, and it's, you can see almost see the relief on their face really. But yeah, it does. Makes me want to shed a tear.
Yeah,
me too. I'll save that for the party, I think. But yeah, it does.
Later that night, Kurt Edmonds made it back within the cutoff time. But the fixed gear rider who we spoke to in the last podcast, Sergei Solubin, he got a puncture and ended up missing the window by 1.5 hours. After him, there were 15 more finishes on Friday and Saturday. And as of Sunday, two riders were still out on the road. At the finishing party, Anna Haslock invited winner Tomáš Jáchelina to the stage.
It was a pleasure riding this race, really. Even when it was, you were at your 8th climb in the day, couldn't do it anymore, still had a great time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Second, I'd like to invite up Edie. First woman.
Edie Harrison finished the race in 5 days, 22 hours and 26 minutes.
Similar really, just thank you for the organisation of it all, and yeah, everybody who sent me nice messages along the way.
Thank you.
Third, I'd like to invite Anders and Engvid.
The first pair, Anders Svertsen and Engvid Tandevoid, rode over the line after 6 days, 8 hours and 50 minutes.
Thanks to the organisers, the volunteers and to everyone who has smiled to us and saying words of courage on the way. So much appreciated. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to extend a thank you to you for listening to the Lost Dot podcast and being part of the inaugural Trans-Pyrenees race. Thanks to PedalEd and Physic for your dedicated trust and support, to our new friends Nicole and Scott from Caprivello in Biarritz, to everyone at Skatepark Biarritz who hosted our registration, and thank you for all the volunteers who gave their time out on the race and dot watching at home. Lost Dot would also like to thank the riders for answering the call of the road and for sharing your experiences with us. And finally, thank you, always, to Mike Hall for the inspiration. Your legacy lives on in every member of this community.